Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Tuesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch. Andrew Johnson of National Review in for Jim Garrity today. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Good, bad, and crazy martinis for you today. As usual, we start with the good. And the president a couple of weeks ago made a lot of headlines by saying, I might not be on the ballot, but my ideas and my agenda are. And for a president who is looking at some of the worst approval ratings of his administration, that's not exactly welcome news to the Democrats trying to stay alive, particularly in red states. Well, the president is at it again, we're happy to say. Yesterday, he was speaking with Al Sharpton on Sharpton's Keeping It Real radio program, and he was asked about the fact that Democrats haven't invited him into some of these key battleground contests, and here's what he said.
It is difficult for them to have me in the state because the Republicans will use that to try to fan Republican turnout. The bottom line is, though, these are all folks who vote with me. They have supported my agenda in Congress. They are on the right side of minimum wage. They are on the right side of fair pay. They are on the right side of rebuilding our infrastructure. They're on the right side of early childhood education. So, this isn't about my feelings being hurt. These are folks who are strong allies and supporters of me. And, I tell them, I said, you know what? You do what you need to win. I will be responsible for making sure that our voters turn out.
Andrew, I'm pretty sure that no you hear is coming from Mark Pryor, Mary Landrieu, Mark Begich, Mark Udall, a couple other folks, Kay Hagan. Just when they thought they were distancing themselves from the president's out there saying, hey, they might not be inviting me, but I can totally count on them to do what I want to do, and even though I know it's very unpopular. So good times.
He literally used the words that that Republicans use in their campaign ads, you know, against these Democratic opponents, like, oh, so-and-so is a strong ally of the president. So-and-so supports the Obama agenda. So-and-so votes with me. I mean, Obama literally said all the things that Democrats, especially red state Democrats, have been trying to run away from for the past year or so since they've been on the campaign trail. And so after they had just gotten away from his last comment, they're having to fend this one off. And every time he sort of says one of these things, you know, there's the joke that, oh, you know, is Obama secretly a Republican plant or what's going on? Or, you know, how people make jokes about Wendy Davis as well. Obviously, that's not the case. But I always wonder if Obama, whenever he says these things, we all say things we wish we could have said better. If he steps back and realizes sort of the trouble he just caused, the Kay Hagans, the Mark Pryors, the Mary Landrieus, or if not, because it's almost entertaining how often he's been doing it.
Exactly. Now, given the context, of course, this is the Al Sharpton radio show, so you got to think he's talking to a mostly black audience, and that's the one group where his approval ratings are still fairly high. And the New York Times talking about on Sunday, that's the Democratic hopes, is to get a much bigger than usual black turnout in the midterm elections and save some of these Senate seats. The problem, though, for the Democrats is they're not the only ones who hear it, and this is going to end up, you got to think, in a ton of ads that a lot of people are going to see who don't like the president.
Oh, exactly. And, you know, even though this was on Al Sharpton's radio show and was heard live at that time, especially if it's a campaign ad and if you're looking to turn out Republican voters, saying here's the president fraternizing with Al Sharpton, who's not a very popular figure amongst conservatives, you know, who are allies with Kay Hagan, with Mark Pryor. So yeah, this interview could have been an interview that we never heard from. It just could have gone without a hitch. But these comments, like, it actually only feed the fire for Republicans to turn out the vote and end up in a campaign ad and give these red state Democrats another obstacle to try and hurdle in these last 2 weeks after they've spent months trying to not be exactly what the president said they were.
We'll see just how many ads that ends up in. But on to the bad martini now. And Andrew, we knew the president was delaying his plans on unilaterally addressing immigration policy until after the midterm elections. But thanks to Breitbart.com and some other sources, we're starting to see what this might look like. And it's pretty big if these reports are accurate. This version of it comes from the UK Daily Mail. Quote, U.S. Citizenship and Immigration Services plans to seek a vendor to produce as many as 34 million blank work permits and green cards, the paperwork that authorizes illegal immigrants to live and work in the United States, as the White House prepares to issue an executive order after the November 4th midterm elections. According to a draft solicitation published online, the government agency will look for a company that can produce a minimum of 4 million cards per year for 5 years and 9 million in the early stages. Andrew, we were kind of hearing about maybe 5 or 6. Some said maybe aggressively as 10 or 11 because that's the unofficial number thrown out around there. But over a span of a few years, 34 million. This is a president that's going further than anybody feels comfortable with, you got to think.
The other sort of bad part of this is we've known this executive action is coming. It's been delayed several times, but we knew it was eventually going to happen. And other than sort of be upset about it, Republicans haven't really offered what they're going to do to oppose it. And there is an opportunity if Republicans take the Senate to actually try and do something meaningful that will sort of rein in what President Obama wants to do. But I think that's also something that opponents of basically what is the Democratic immigration plan need to be concerned about, because there hasn't been a cohesive message to oppose this other than just say the president can't do it, which again, I'm sure has been discussed multiple times everywhere that this is an issue. But 34 million is a big number, and it's definitely concerning, especially if you're not in this camp of the Democratic immigration plan.
Particularly when you think of the money perhaps being spent on services, more than three times as much as you would have expected if the real number was around 10 million. But that's the maximum. And we're not saying it'll be that number, but when you make that the parameters, it obviously is going to raise a lot of eyebrows.
And again, it's sort of something that people have, the general idea of this people have seen coming for a while now. It just looks like it's built up, and we'll just see what happens.
All right, on to the crazy martini now. Andrew, we haven't had a good midterm scandal of this magnitude since 1998. Monica Lewinsky, of course, that whole scandal broke in January of 98. You had the Clinton admission in the summer. There was briefly a chance where some Democrats were on the brink of suggesting he resign. That didn't happen. And then by the time the midterms rolled around, it was actually kind of working in their favor. Some thought Republicans had overplayed their hand, and actually it turned out fairly well for Bill Clinton. But ever since then, Monica Lewinsky has been very quiet. She's popped out a few times to have comments or articles or the very occasional interview. But she gave a speech yesterday and said a number of things about the scandal, including just how she was feeling at the time about her and her presidential boyfriend.
I fell in love with my boss in a 22-year-old sort of way. It happened. But my boss was the president of the United States. That probably happens less often.
And then she really went after Matt Drudge, saying that Drudge destroyed her life, and she claimed that she was a pioneer in terms of cyberbullying.
I was patient zero, the first person to have their reputation completely destroyed worldwide via the internet.
Andrew, what do you make of all this?
I don't know if it's a product of the internet age or of 2014, but it is just interesting to sort of watch the outpouring of sympathy for Monica Lewinsky. One has to wade carefully in these sorts of issues, but I just think if we went back to 98 to say that there'd sort of be this news cycle story that where Monica Lewinsky would almost be celebrated for what's, by the way, I don't know how many returns of Monica Lewinsky we need to have. Every time I feel like this is the return of Monica Lewinsky, even though she seems to have an interview every year or so. But to me, it's just sort of fascinating to watch, to just see the excitement that continues to follow her, to the press coverage it gets. Just not something I would have expected to see.
No, in some ways, you know, it almost appears that she still is dwelling in 1998, and given what she went through, I suppose that's understandable on a number of levels. If you're the Clintons, to see her emerging publicly for however long, whether it's just briefly or to some extent on a larger scale, just right before Hillary's probably about to launch a presidential campaign in 2 or 3 months, that probably can't be welcome news, and it's certainly a reminder to the American people that if you elect one Clinton, you definitely get both, and with both comes a bit of baggage.
That's also my point. Some ways you would have thought that had Lewinsky come forward and become a public figure, it'd actually be even more damaging for the Clinton brand. And in some ways, yeah, it's going to bring up those stories again, that storyline, that narrative. But she almost comes up completely as a separate entity from the Clintons and not even discussed in that light. I mean, she mentions obviously the president. We all know what she's talking about, but it's not tied to Hillary and Bill anymore. It's almost just Monica and sort of her own universe. And so I guess you're a little concerned if you're the Clintons, but it's also not as damaging as it probably could have been at one point.
Yeah, at no point. I mean, she did say in the speech that what she did was wrong because people got hurt and so forth. But nowhere in there is there any sort of regret about getting involved with the president or the president deserving any of the blame. Obviously, if she had carried on with someone other than him, she wouldn't have been in the spotlight that she was and cyber-bullied, as she alleges. So very interesting how she kind of frames that time in her life and how Bill Clinton kind of skates scot-free.
Yeah, exactly.
Andrew, as always, great to have you with us. Thanks for being with us today. We'll talk to you later.
Thanks, sir.
Andrew Johnson of National Review. In for Jim Garrity today. Jim will be back on Wednesday. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us, and tune in again on Wednesday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.